Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
And welcome and good morning. I'm Harry Miller.
Good morning. I'm Dave Kubikian.
Dave and I are two of the attorneys with the Herzog Law Firm. We are conveniently located over in Corporate Woods, just off of I-90. We also have three other offices. We have an office in Saratoga Springs,
yes, we do.
Kingston, New York, and our brand new office in Clifton Park, which we just opened
this week.
This week, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So you can meet us in any of those four locations. We're here each Saturday morning to talk to you about estate planning, elder law, asset protection planning, estate administration, real estate. We do a lot of real estate. We've added a real estate attorney to the staff as of the first of the year, and we can handle all of your real property needs for buying and selling homes, or all that kind of stuff, title insurance, and love to talk to you this morning.
Well, more on that in a second, Harry, on the real estate part, but we do have a caller. We have Carolyn Herkimer. Good morning, Carol. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Good. You're getting up early, huh, Carol?
Yeah, I'm up early every day.
Oh, I like it. So what's up?
Like 4:30.
Wow, that is early.
So what's going on, Carol?
Well, I called last week because I was calling about my husband passed away.
I'm sorry.
I didn't have a will. My name wasn't on the deed because he was married before and he didn't want to do another deed. Once he got the mortgage paid off, we were going to take care of it. But I have a lawyer who hasn't done a thing. And so when I called last week, I asked her, I said, he's telling me that I own 2/3 of the house. The other third belongs to the 5 kids. And she told me that I'm entitled to half of that other third.
Okay.
I called my lawyer back and told him all this. He hasn't gotten back to me at all. But I have another question. My husband had credit cards that were in just his name.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I've been paying them.
Okay.
Because he told me I have to pay them.
The attorney said that. The he that told you, you're saying your attorney told you to pay them?
Yes.
Okay. So here's the deal. Okay. And some of this you probably already know, but let's just make sure that we're all on the same page. So a loved one passes away, and they may or may not have an estate depending on what they own and how they own it. And in this case, at least there was a home that your husband owned that didn't automatically go to you or anyone else because it didn't avoid probate. So we're going to have an estate. That estate includes not just the house, but any other assets that he owned where there was not a beneficiary or there wasn't a co-owner on it with some sort of survivorship right, okay? And then the estate also includes debts that he had, valid debts. And so the whole point of an administration on an estate, this whole thing you're dealing with right now, is figuring out what assets there are, what liabilities there are, and who exactly is going to be in charge of dealing with it. It sounds like you will be. And the question, it sounds like from well, let me ask you, was there a will or is there no will?
There was no will.
Okay. So New York State's going to say how things are going to go, but what pile of money exactly is there? Well, that depends. The liabilities of the estate are to be paid by the estate. The taxes on this house, by the estate, the National Grid bill, all that stuff, right? So if you're right now paying them, you're going to be reimbursed from the estate. But as you mentioned, from what the attorney said, you're getting a good chunk of the estate, so you're kind of going to be paying back yourself in some form. Okay? So far, so good?
I've been paying these bills. He told me this goes well.
Yeah, well, you know, we don't want interest and penalties to accrue. But normally what happens with credit card debt is if someone lets them know there's been a death, they'll at least put a pause on accruing interest and things like that and penalties. Because they know it takes time. It's going to take time for the state of New York to formally recognize you as the administrator so that way you can then figure out what assets there are and start paying some of the liabilities.
Okay, so the only thing we had was he had a truck and he said that was automatically mine.
Okay. So
yeah,
we
spousal,
had that.
Yeah, there's a spousal exemption.
That
yes.
was
yeah. So
his name and it was in his mother's name, but they transferred her to me, so I had his share and this share, but then there's 5 kids, 3 of ours and then 2 from a previous marriage.
Right.
He's telling me I have to do a deed to each one of the five kids, and then they're all going to do a deed back to me.
Well, kind of. Kind of. Certainly, if nobody agreed on anything ever, it would be something like that, right? The state of New York has a formula for how this estate's going to be divided, what share you're going to keep, what share each of those five kids are going to get, okay? That doesn't mean every single asset's going to be cut into pieces. We're not going to divide the lamp into six different pieces. And when it comes to the, just in general, yes, there's going to be some amount of value that they're entitled to. They can decide we don't want that value. They can decide we sure do want that value. And normally what will end up happening in one way, shape, or form is rather than all those deeds and all those recording fees, probably there's some agreement on a buyout where they get cash and you get all the house or something like that. But I did want to say you do have an attorney. I mean, you may not like how fast things are progressing, and it may be normal. It may not be normal. But use your attorney, because I'm pretty certain that you're going to be billed anyway. So you might as well pose these questions and make sure that they're responsive to you.
Well, my point is, I said, when I call him, then he'll say, oh, yeah, I should really get started on this or something. But I'm like...
That's things lawyers shouldn't say on the phone to their clients.
Maybe you need a
number
different
one.
Attorney. Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably on the credit card side, I have... if you're not on the card... If you're not a co-signer on the card, you're probably not personally liable for the credit card debt, but the credit card company could file a claim against him, and that would be a claim against the estate assets, which would include the house. So, at some point, probably somebody's going to have to deal with it, you know, because we have this house that's passing through intestacy, so. Even though it's not your personal liability, you're still going to realistically have to deal with it in some fashion.
Right.
So, like, okay. Carol, if you were not the beneficiary in any way of this estate, okay, you just happened to be receiving these bills, you would have zero obligation to pay anything. But I guess what Harry's saying is at some point it's going to be paid or dealt with. Yeah. Or settled to some degree. And because you're the majority beneficiary of the estate, it's not the worst thing in the world that you happen to be paying this right now. I would focus myself if you're thinking, all right, well, I don't have unlimited funds to start paying every single bill. I'd pay house bills and not the credit card bills because you'd call them and say, there's been a death, right? I'm not sending in this check because he's still alive, right? Because in all likelihood, they'll put it in a different pile where you stop getting these calls.
That's still accruing interest. That's the problem. You're still accruing interest at probably,
right,
you know, 16% a year. So, and I don't know, it's tough. You know, when my mother died 10 years, my mother had a second husband who was not my father when he died. Charlie had about $20,000 of credit card debt. My mother never knew about it. And those bills kept coming to the house, and she said to me, she said, boy, I'm going to have to pay these. And I said, no, you're not. They're not your cards.
Right.
And Charlie didn't have any assets. He didn't, you know, basically didn't have a plugged nickel. And he was a nice guy. But, you know.
Well, Harry, even if he had a lot of assets, it's, you know, score one for avoiding probate. Score one for not having an estate.
Right. If those assets were jointly owned, it would be harder to collect out of. Yes, because they don't. The claim is against the estate. So if there are no assets in the estate, that means they're in a trust. Or they're in beneficiary form.
It's an insolvent estate.
Then you have a claim against nothing.
Yep.
All right. So.
Now, my husband was the house. He didn't have any cash. He didn't have.
Right. So that was it.
Any
just
money
house.
Or anything. He had his truck that we just bought.
Right.
And the house.
Well, so, you know, Carol, if you're not happy with your attorney, we're happy to talk to you. We would meet with you at no charge and kind of get a full lay of the land. And, you know, the procedure is going to be the same no matter what, but it sounds like the speed might be bugging you here. All right?
Well, it's just, I mean, I don't want to have to call him all the time to get him to do something.
No, you shouldn't have to do that. That's not right, yeah.
If nothing else, you can call us at 8:01 every Saturday, and we're happy to answer your questions.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for listening. Our number here is 518-476-5900 if you'd like to talk to Dave and I. We'll be here for the next hour till 9 o'clock. And
now I can tell you, Harry, if my mom was in that situation, every bill would have been paid immediately. And and because that's just like the personality she is. But we tell clients, if you pay a creditor today, and there's no more money left because you paid all the money to this one creditor today on day one of the estate, and someone shows up on the seventh month of the estate, they're on equal footing. You're going to be in
trouble.
That's
right. Because you've overpaid one and underpaid the other, or not paid the other at all.
You know, not to be sarcastic, Harry, we're not worried about credit scores anymore.
No.
You know what I'm saying? There's no prize.
Deceased, for a deceased person. No.
There's no prize for paying something early. So take your time. The estates are designed to take a long time. That's what we don't like about them, but that also means that you could stop and get the lay of the land a little bit.
Correct. Correct.
So, Harry, a lot in the news. I don't know if you heard, but...
What's going on in the news?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh.
We're joking a little bit here.
Super Bowl tomorrow.
Well, it's Super Bowl tomorrow. My 49ers are playing. Oh. I'm very excited. Obviously, there was a week ago tomorrow, there was obviously a very public helicopter crash that took place in Calabasas.
How awful.
I'm sure many of you know, so NBA superstar Kobe Bryant, along with 8 other people, including his daughter, including 2 of his daughter's friends, obviously the pilot, a couple parents for the kids, you know, passed away. And whenever there's a celebrity death, it's not like you or I could really relate to that celebrity. And we're going to have the same issues. I remember when Prince passed away without a will.
Without a will.
Right.
Probably at least as much money as Kobe. But up there in the 400, 500, you know.
Up there.
Hundreds of millions, not mere millionaire, hundreds of millions of dollars. And this estate is probably hundreds of millions of dollars.
So anyone out there, you can't relate to that, right? There are estate tax lessons that could be learned, but we don't need to talk about that. We don't have hundreds of millions of dollars. We don't have a brand. Right, Harry Miller is not a brand. Well, Harry and David's a brand, but unfortunately, that's not our brand.
That's too bad.
Too bad.
I could get rich on the Moose Munch.
But like Prince,
but you're right. The value of your image. If you're a famous person, the value of your image is an asset of your estate. Now, my image isn't probably worth a whole lot. David's is worth far more than mine.
Hey, excuse me. You know, we're in the presence of Jay here.
Jay's image is worth 10 times.
Oh, my goodness.
He's been on radio so long. He's a famous person in the capital region, you know. So, but here's the deal. What is it worth? You know, the IRS and Michael Jackson's been dead for what, 10 years?
A long time, yeah.
He and the IRS are still embroiled in litigation over the value of Michael Jackson's image. Okay, the IRS valued Michael Jackson's image as of the date of his death at something like $450 million. Okay?
Yeah.
In a 40% tax bracket. Okay?
Right.
Do you know what the estate valued it at? $1,250.
I think that was, yeah.
There's some bad jokes in there. He was in bankruptcy. He was down and out. He was a drug. He had suffered all sorts of slings and arrows from all those lawsuits. And as of the fact that it became valuable a month later, we value assets as of the date of death, not a month later, unless you elect alternate valuation, which you wouldn't in this case.
Right. So, obviously, no one's going to relate to that, right? No one's image is going to be that valuable. No one has a vault full of unreleased tracks from Prince, right? None of this applies. In fact, none of you out there, you could have a vault full of music. You might. None of you out there, I assume, will go to your daughter's basketball tournament with a helicopter.
In a helicopter.
Right. We can't relate to any of these things except for one really important one. So I was looking at a couple articles as to the ages of the people who passed away. Now, obviously, children passing away, nothing worse than that. Kobe was 41, okay? The other parents were between 40 and, I think, 52 years old. And what we scream from the mountaintops all the time is not you're going to one day possibly pass away in a helicopter or your plane's going to go down. It's stuff happens, and you should make sure your estate has been created, at least a plan, where things go, who your agents are going to be. And when these big celebrities pass away, there are articles all the time like clockwork.
It's a wake-up call.
Right. What Kobe did wrong with his estate planning. Most of that will not apply to anyone, right? If he didn't have a trust, well, shame on him. Of course, he should have had a trust. But for all of us regular folk, power of attorney, healthcare proxy, try to avoid probate, right? Carol's dealing with probate right now. That could have been avoided.
Correct.
Right? She's dealing with creditors. That could have been avoided.
Well, the same thing happens if, for instance, we don't know if he had a will or not.
No.
Prince didn't have a will. Aretha Franklin had these handwritten wills that we don't even know if they're going to be admitted to probate.
Right.
These are very famous, very wealthy people who had lousy estate planning done for them or didn't do it at all, more to the point. But can you imagine in New York, this woman of the house, in New York, you die without a will, the spouse gets $50,000 and half of the rest, the other half goes to the kids. That may be the same in California.
Yeah.
Imagine half of the estate going to his kids, who are minors, and also subjecting it to a 40% estate tax.
Yeah. Yeah. Look,
enormous. And no trust for the kids.
You got to have a plan. If you don't have a plan, there actually already is a plan for you, and it's not a very good one. So we want you to be proactive, and when these bad things happen, we don't want you to think, oh, my God, it's going to happen to me necessarily. But you know what? It might in some way, shape, or form. Have your documents all set up.
Well, hopefully we will find this out. We'll keep you posted because this is all, you know, I mean, apart from the tragedy of this young father, famous guy, I mean, you know, he was really, I mean, Los Angeles, I think, is like in, you know, shock.
He probably was.
It only happened a week ago.
He probably was the most well-known, best and youngest, if you could combine all those, retired athletes
mm-hmm.
that are out there, right?
Yeah.
And from all accounts, because in his old age, in his old NBA career, he kind of softened up and became less of a competitor and more of a loving teammate and dad and this and that. There are stories after stories about it. Obviously, there was a lot of things that I think he and even more so his daughter was going to be doing. She was one heck of a basketball player. She was going to be doing some real big things, and it's obviously tragic.
Mm. Anyway. Lessons in these tragic stories.
Now, Harry, you mentioned at the start here our new office in Clifton Park. We do have a new office in Clifton Park. It's right downtown, right on 146.
Right off of 146 there.
Yep. And we did also add an attorney, Dan Glasser, and he's an experienced real estate attorney. And for your, you know, those of you who are clients, and you're saying, wait a minute, now you're starting to do real estate. You did my closing.
We've always done
real estate.
We always did it.
But now, because of Dan's addition and some staff additions, not just the ability, but the speed. You know, I always think the most important thing in legal services, not just good services, but fast, good services. And because of Dan's addition now, we're going to be able to handle a lot
and
more.
Reasonably priced. Yes.
Absolutely. So if you or your loved ones have buying, selling, trading, whatever you feel like doing real estate, make sure you give us a call. We're happy to help. Same story. We'll talk for free and then give you a quote. And if you like it, off we go.
All right. Definitely. 518-476-5900 is our number here at Magic 590. Or if you're outside the local calling area, we have a lot of outside the local calling area listeners. 1-800-WROW-590.
So, Harry, should we talk about it? Can we talk about it now?
Yes.
Okay. So, the biggest news, everybody. So, we are attorneys. We would be remiss if we didn't talk about the biggest law story probably of my generation. Maybe your generation
as well,
Harry.
You probably just barely remember the last impeachment trial.
What do you mean?
How old were you when Bill Clinton was tried?
Oh. It was
20 years ago? 15, 25 years ago?
15 years old.
A teenager? You weren't thinking a lot about what was going on in Washington.
We got a caller who might be interrupting here.
Well, that's okay. We want the callers.
Yeah. So, obviously, there's been a very public impeachment of our President Donald J. Trump. And we're not going to get political. There's no reason for you to know how I feel or Harry feels about any of this. But there is one part of it that we really wanted to clarify because, and again, we're not criminal attorneys. But there's something called a grand jury, Harry. Okay, I'm a student of the TV show Law and Order. I've seen every Law and Order there is. So I know very well that if someone is thinking that you committed a crime, they may present all of their facts, the prosecution.
The district attorney to a grand jury. Right.
There is no other side to it. There are no other witnesses that are saying, no, it didn't happen.
Well, there's no witnesses for the accused person.
Right. There's no counsel.
And no counsel. Right.
And if the grand jury, so the idea is if we take all the facts, as the prosecutor said, and if we took all those facts and they were all true,
Right,
all the claims are all true, and there's a thing there, a crime, well, then you can indict that person. And in the world of Article 2, And the indictment happens with the House of Representatives. It's called impeachment, right? So yes. There have been a couple impeachments in our history. This is the fourth.
Presidential. Yeah, there have been lots of other ones. Right.
And so the idea is the same. The fact that the House impeached didn't mean that anyone is guilty necessarily. But what it means then is that other bicameral entity called the Senate will conduct a trial. And that's where, as you've heard, the defense says, well, but this, and the prosecution says, well, but that. And normally there are witnesses there. And whether I think anyone's guilty or not is irrelevant, I don't know, because I don't know the facts. Because I don't think they were.
Well, there are no facts and evidence.
There are no facts, and that's the problem. So, if nothing else, you're out there. You know, I'm not for or against any political party. At least I'm not when I'm on the radio. Okay, but I am for fairness, or at least whatever. Look, next time you get a parking ticket, go ahead and say, "Well, that ticket, I don't want that ticket to be part of the evidence," and see how that works out for you.
Well, I think it's just to. To call it a trial, the Constitution does say, literally, that the Senate shall try the impeachment.
Yeah.
Now I'm not a trial attorney, but I got to tell you, when I think about a trial, I think about the fact that there are normally, after each side makes its opening argument, then what the next thing the judge says is, Mr. President, call your first witness.
Yeah.
And then there are no witnesses.
Well, you know, Harry,
there is no evidence. And then, so we've had the opening arguments, and then we had a question and answer session that was presided over by Justice Roberts. And now next week they're going to make their closing arguments after having presented no evidence. And then they're going to vote, but juries are supposed to deliberate before they come back with a verdict.
So kind of, there's an estate planning angle to this. Believe it or not, I'm going to get to it in a second, but we do have a caller.
Well, that's one heck of a segue there.
We do. I got a good one. It's a good one. Hey, Sue in, I can't read, Wineskill. How are you, Sue? What's going on?
I'm well, thank you. I'm a client of your firm. You weren't getting a lot of call-ins, so I figured I'd take an opportunity to call and thank you for the package you sent out on fiduciary tax returns.
Oh. Yeah, of course.
Oh, they're ready too. Yes.
Yeah.
Did you get to? Yeah, we just got them out like a week ago. So.
Yeah, I'm working my way through it this morning, and it's just very, very well done.
Well, if you have any questions.
And it's saving me the cost of having to go to look.
Well, it might save you a couple $100 because really it's simple. You can do it. You really can do it yourself. Jane Marie puts that together every year.
Harry, why don't you just take it? So some people are out there saying, what is a fiduciary tax return? So what are we talking about here?
Well, our trust. If your trust has assets, money, stocks, bonds in it, and there's more than $600 of income in your trust in the course of the year we're talking about is the tax year 2019, you're supposed to file a tax return for the trust. It's called a fiduciary return. It's a tax return for a trust or an estate. So our Medicaid trusts are these kinds of trusts. Now, your trust isn't actually going to pay any taxes. The taxes pass through to you individually because you're the beneficiary of the trust, all right? So your Medicaid trust says, whoever your trustee is, you're entitled to all the income, all right? So you pay the tax on it, whether you take it or not. So that's what you got to do. So let's say your trust had $6,000 of income from dividends and capital gain and a little bit of interest maybe on some money market funds that are in your brokerage account. So you file this thing, and we'll give you, if you call the office, we'll send you out free of charge the instructions for filling out the federal and state tax return for your trust. And, you know, some people have their accountant do it as part of their they have their personal 1040.
Right.
And that's perfectly fine. A lot of you out there do your own taxes, and now it's pretty simple now.
And you can. You can
there's a new
it.
See, this year, and if you're not aware of it, if you're over 65, there's a new 1040. It's called a 1040 SR for seniors. And so if your income is primarily Social Security, pension, IRA distributions, dividends and interest, which most older people, they don't have sophisticated sources of income, you can fill out this even more simplified form, and maybe you can do your own trust tax. So call the office, and we'll get it out to you, all right? It's free. We don't charge you.
Thanks so much for the call.
Described is exactly what's happening with the estate that I'm trying to settle. I can do the the 1040, whatever the form is going to result in, using TurboTax.
Wonderful.
Yeah, sure.
But TurboTax won't handle this trust.
Right.
No, it probably doesn't have a fiduciary. See, we have a, yeah, but you can print the forms out. I mean, you can go to the IRS website and print out the form.
You can, but your instructions are more simplified.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, it's a great package. Just
well, thanks.
To thank you for it.
Well, that's what it's there for. The other thing is, you know, you file this, you don't file it the same place you file your 1040. It goes to a different location for the IRS. But I think we tell you that in the instructions.
Very good. So we got a couple minutes here, Harry, and I'm going to spin this whole impeachment thing. So here's the deal. The Constitution isn't a very long document. I don't know last time you actually looked at the Constitution, but it's not very long. It really isn't.
No, it's not.
And the problem is that we have words in there, and depending on the argument, some people will say, well, these words are exactly what these words mean. We can't stray from these words at all. I'm going to be a strict
constructionist.
Yeah.
These strict constructionists. Yes.
And there's other things that say, well, it's, you know, 1780, whatever, 1789. Obviously, there's different things now. There's cars. There's electricity. There's this, there's that, right? And they couldn't have anticipated everything. Right, there's legal things that exist now that you couldn't have existed.
Right.
Kobe Bryant died in a helicopter accident. There were not helicopters, right? There wasn't a basketball league. Like, there's all sorts of things that don't exist back then. And here's my angle, Harry Miller. If you have a document, a legal document, and it takes into account lots of different situations, if it's well-worded, right? If it's not up for, well, I think this means this, I think this means that, you're going to have success in whatever you're doing, right? If you have a contract and it's a well-worded contract, if there's a dispute, well, boom, section 4B says whatever, right?
Right.
Or there's a clause that says how to resolve this. If you have a trust, right? What happens if your daughter dies and everything goes to your grandkid who's 10 years old?
Right.
If you have language for that, obviously we don't want that to happen, but if it does,
we want to cover all the bases, right?
Right. And unfortunately, we have a very old document that stood the test of time, right, in the Constitution.
So far.
But not a lot of, Harry, be careful.
Sorry.
Not a lot of rules as to how this whole impeachment thing exactly is going to take place. So the word try, right, you're saying it says try.
Try the case.
And the other side says, well, try doesn't mean that. Try means it was already tried. So my point is, when it comes to estate planning, you got to plan, not just plan like I went online and I planned. No, that's not the plan. The plan is you go see Harry Miller, Jane Marie, Debbie Verney, myself, whoever, and you actually get yourself a plan, a well-thought-out plan that takes into account now and also takes into account 40 years from now.
All right. I did this yesterday. I had a client in the office whose daughter got married recently, and she and her husband don't have any. We got a break.
No, we're all right for a little bit.
And her husband have a. They got married, but they didn't have any kids yet. So she wanted to provide something for grandchildren. So I said, "Well, why don't we provide for grandchildren, even though you don't have any?" So she said, "Great. So we can put a provision in her will that says, hey, I want to leave $10,000 to each of my grandchildren.'" So if when she passes away, her daughter has a couple of kids, they'll each get $10,000. And if she doesn't have any kids, they won't get it. But
right. That
way, we can plan for children that aren't even born yet, and she doesn't have to come back 5 years from now and make a new will.
Harry, I had a client yesterday, a lovely couple. Their kids are one's a minor, one just became an adult. And we planned in our will for them. It involves their grandkids. Well, we don't have grandkids. Right? Our kids aren't married. Well, they will be one day. And although we love you as a client, we'd prefer not to see you every single time that someone's born or a grandkid's born.
You shouldn't have to come back and redo your will every time something happens. I mean, you ought to look at it, make sure it's still okay.
Right. Well, we'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany County office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. I'm Harry Miller.
Good morning. I'm Dave Kabikin.
And we've been chatting this half hour. We're with the Herzog Law Firm in Albany, Kingston, Saratoga, and Clifton Park. We got most of the Mid-Hudson Valley covered, I think.
Oh, sure do.
And we're here each Saturday morning, as you know, if you're a regular listener. We welcome you if you're a new listener here at Magic 590, where we will be chatting about estate planning, Medicaid planning, asset protection planning, estate administration.
We will not be chatting about politics.
No. We're done.
We got it out.
We're done. Let's move on. It is, however, tomorrow, besides...
Oh, I know where you're going. Yep.
Besides being the Super Bowl tomorrow,
yep,
and a very important day, it is also Groundhog Day. Okay? I just want to take a minute, because nothing is sacred anymore. Now, Punxsutawney Phil... Punxsutawney Phil has been around for 134 years.
He looks good.
In Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. Yeah. I grew up in Pennsylvania, but on the other side, I grew up in the Philadelphia side. But he looks pretty good for a guy that's 134 years old.
Sure.
PETA, the Society for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, is trying to put Punxsutawney Phil out of business and replace him with an artificially intelligent groundhog. They say it's long overdue for Phil to retire. And that it's inhumane and cruel to drag this groundhog, who would normally be hibernating on February 2nd, out of his hole, parade him around in school, hold him up to cameras. And while I believe in animal rights, I'm certainly a proponent of animal rights, there's some disagreement from the Punxsutawney Phil Groundhog Club in Pennsylvania. They believe that Phil is actually well cared for. The average groundhog, you know, only lives 4 to 6 years. Phil, the society that maintains Punxsutawney Phil, claims that he's 134 years old as a result of a mysterious elixir that he drinks every summer, and that extends his life by 7 years for every swallow, and that's why he's been so healthy all these years. Okay, then.
Good luck. Yeah, good luck with that argument there.
He also is well-fed. He subsists on a diet of bananas, apples, and other wonderful organic foods. He has a companion named Phyllis.
Of course he does.
Anyway, we'll see him tomorrow morning at sunrise, and we'll let you know. Although he is not the most accurate meteorologist on the block, I don't think he's wrong more often than he's right, but I find that amusing. Enough frivolity. Back to the seriousness of estate planning.
Well, we do have seminars in February. I know we just got done with our seminars in January. I actually had one in Kingston 2 days ago.
Just last week.
Yeah, and the one I did was on aging in place, and it was well attended and a lot of good questions. Next month, we're going to be talking about wills versus trusts. That's one of our more popular seminars. It's going to be in the, looks like, the final week of February, so about a month out there. I might as well give you the days and times just in case you want to mark your calendar. The topic, again, wills versus trusts, February 25th at 2 p.m. It's still weird to see the year 2020. I'm not used to it yet. So February 25th, we'll be in Albany right by SUNY at the Courtyard by Marriott. That's 1455 Washington Avenue. Next day, February 26th at 2 p.m., we'll be in Saratoga Springs at the Residence Inn on Excelsior Avenue. By the way, Chowderfest going on today.
This weekend, today.
Saratoga. Stay away or go and enjoy. They're blocking a bunch of streets. February 27th, next day at 10 a.m., we're going to be again in Albany at the Staybridge Suites. That's right next to Macy's in
It's Columbia a nice hotel. Center. Lovely facility.
It is very nice. It really is. And then lastly, same day, same time, so you can't attend both, we'll be also at the Queensbury Hotel in Glens Falls. Talk about a beautiful hotel.
I haven't been up there in years.
They redid it. It is fantastic.
Wow.
If you'd like to see it at one of those seminars, you can call our office at 518-465-7581. You can go to our website at www.herzoglaw.com, and you can click on the seminar page, and off you go.
Right. Cool.
Seminars are a great way to get information without, being across the table from one of us for an hour. Sometimes it's a little overwhelming.
We have a lot to say. We have a lot to say. There's a lot of other people there. I mean, I don't know. I think we had 30, 35 people there. You know, it's a good way to meet us, check us out, see what you think about, you know.
Well,
and get some really good information that you ought to start thinking about.
We had someone who came to my seminar 2 days ago, Harry. This was her third seminar.
Uh-huh.
And she is already a client. But she likes getting more information, and she likes listening to each of us because we each have our own, I don't want to call it a style because I don't think it's that complicated, but we all, you know, I say things a certain way. You certainly say things a certain way.
We're pretty much presenting the same information, but we're all individuals.
Different perspectives.
We have our own style.
Yeah. And the slides are different at times. So if you've been to one, you should come again. You can get a lot out of it. Obviously, if you're a client, we'd be happy to see.
Excuse me.
We'd be happy to see you at the seminar. Every time I do one, I learn from it. I mean, I'm not learning the material as much as learning a better way to present it, a better way to communicate some really complicated principles. You know, when we're talking about a Medicaid crisis plan, Harry, we're talking about.
All right. Exactly.
We're going to do a trust that's called irrevocable. And we're going to tell you it's revocable. And you're going to say, well, irrevocable doesn't mean that, right? We got to find the right way to explain these things to you. And we're learning just as much as our clients are, just a different kind of learning.
Well, I think one of the reasons we're learning all the time is because the seminars, when we do our seminars, I don't know about you, but they're very interactive. I mean, I encourage the audience to ask questions during the presentation. We got to keep a little bit if there's a lot of people there, but we interact during the course, and I think what I learned from the people there is every time we do a seminar, is a new question that comes out, a different twist on a planning method that says, wow, yeah, that's a really good question. And then we talk about it and stuff. And so we're learning the whole time that we're getting you information. And it's not like a college lecture where you're in a room with 200 people and the professor's just talking, droning on for an hour and a half, you know, and you're falling asleep on the books. I think it's a little more fun than that.
I sure hope so. You know, the other part of us continuing to learn is that, you know, I mean, obviously people don't need to know how our firm works, but every other Friday, we're all in the same room, Harry. We're talking about Medicaid files that we're dealing with and novel ways to deal with certain issues. And then this worked, this didn't work. And from that, because, you know, when you're planning, you need to know those end results in order to plan for them, right? So if we know in a Medicaid application in a really sticky situation, you know, we're going to need to have this argument in order to succeed. Well,
right.
When we plan your document, we'll revise our trust to make sure we're dealing with that now so that we don't have to deal with it in the future.
Well, you have to understand that we do a tremendous amount of Medicaid, not just planning. We do a tremendous number of Medicaid applications where we're actually filing and applying for Medicaid, either for home care or the counties are getting stricter and stricter about limiting, you know, these applications. David, just a couple of months ago, won a tremendous fair hearing in terms of a client who had business assets that weren't making a profit for a while, but they were there, and he got a very favorable decision that basically exempted these assets from being countable resources. I mean, that's like making new law, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, it was, you're applying the rules to the facts, right? That's what it is.
But the facts are different in every case.
Right. And so, again, you're stuck with these in our case, they're regulations, they're not a statute, but you have these regulations that say certain, what is a business? A business is defined as XYZ. A business that is current, a business that's ongoing, must have income within blank or expect, right? I'm not going to get into it, but the point is we had a piece of land that was used for fracking.
Mm-hmm.
It's not being used for fracking anymore. It's a valuable piece of land. You subdivide that piece of land, it is valuable. It's not in exactly downtown Albany, right? I mean, it's about 200 miles away from here.
Yeah.
And I have to drive out there to do the fair hearing. But the point is, we were able to exempt something that was worth, you know,
and the cannabis makes sitting there saying, well, you have to make a profit this year. Well, anybody who runs a business, you know, some years you make more money than others, you know. Some years you don't make a profit, okay?
So
I mean, that's what the nature, it's the risk of a small business, right? The county has this mentality, oh, you make a profit every year. Well, obviously they've never run a business.
Well, so in this fact pattern, Harry, they obviously the monies they were getting, their fees they were getting from the company's fracking dwindled mm-hmm. down over time. The other year, right before we applied, there was virtually zero income from fracking,
mm-hmm.
but they did make a couple bucks from baling hay.
Uh huh.
And
well, it was wooded, and you could. There was a lot of acreage, right?
Right. Like, and then they allowed a kid mm-hmm. to clean up, and then he could keep the hay to do whatever he's got to do. And I said, look, it doesn't say it's got to be a good business in this regulation. It says a business. Business means trying to make money based on what we're saying here. And once I kind of pigeonholed them into that, well, we got a vacant piece of land. Now, I also said, look, tomorrow they may subdivide this land and sell it, right? It wasn't like it was owned in our client's name. It was an LLC
mm-hmm.
because the LLC had been licensing to fracking companies.
Mm-hmm.
But you're... Obviously, again, how many people out there are dealing with this right now? None. The point is, we are constantly learning, and we are also at times at the forefront of developing mm-hmm. parts of this law. So certainly, okay. when you're going to be planning, that's an asset for us. Absolutely, Harry. We have the best Medicaid paralegals in this state. Maybe I mean,
I agree. I agree.
When we have a complicated fact pattern, and most importantly, when we got to get a document out and we got to make quick decisions and process your information quickly to save the month of February so you qualify, save the month of March so you qualify, you're almost losing money if you don't go with the good plus fast mm-hmm. operation.
Yeah, that's anyway. Super.
So I did have, speaking of Medicaid, Harry, a client that we did talk about a little bit. And score one for contacting Harry Miller before you make big decisions with an estate planner assets. Because one of the more immediate, you know, everyone knows there's a 5-year look back period when it comes to Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sometimes you can't undo the transactions you do during that 5-year look back period. A lot of times our clients will say, trusts sound good, but they sound expensive. We'll just give money to our kids. We'll just do this. You know, we'll qualify for community Medicaid just by getting everything out of our name. We'll give it to our daughter, as an example. And we are always constantly praising our Medicaid Asset Protection Trust. And the big reason for it is when you use that as a vehicle to hold money, when we get you qualified by putting money in that trust, for example, or we do it 5 years ahead of time, you, the client, always have access to that money. If you want to partially revoke that trust to pull your own money out of your own trust, you could do it.
You can do it.
You don't have to rely on your daughter finally agreeing to give you back your own money, as an example.
And it isn't even that she wouldn't do it, but what if you put $100,000 in your daughter's name instead of in a trust, and she's got some kids who are going to go off to college now, and they're going to apply for financial aid.
Right.
She got to put that money on her financial statement because it's legally her money now. It's going to affect their ability to get financial aid for their kids for college.
What if she puts it in her account with her husband? They put their incomes in, they commingle the money, they get a divorce. Bye-bye money, right?
There's a lot of things that can happen to kids inadvertently, not their fault, you know? You know, bad things. They get sick, they die, they get, to, as David said, they get divorced, they...
So, Harry, I got another question for you here, and I think I've posed this to you before. So, recently, and I'm flattered, a couple clients said, would you be our backup whatever?
Ah, fiduciary.
And I said, no, thank you, but no. Backup executive, no thank you. Backup power attorney, absolutely no thank you. Backup trustee, please no, right? For clients, and they said, well, it's you or nobody. Do we go with nobody? And they said, well, you're not going with me. So what's your 2 cents for people out there who...
It's really hard.
they have a small family, they don't have a they don't trust people, or people aren't the right age. How should they go about finding a good fiduciary?
Pooh. It's a very difficult question to answer, because there are there are people, in fact, there's a name for them. They're called gray orphans. They are people who have a spouse, maybe they don't have a spouse, maybe they're widowed.
Right.
And their children either have predeceased them, or they're off somewhere, or they're estranged from them, or they don't have any children, and nobody on either side of the family is trusted. That is a real dilemma for a lot of people. We use sometimes people who are close personal friends, sometimes someone at church or in a social setting would be willing to do that, to act. I have people who... They just live next door to this old lady, and they're nice to her. And so she comes in, and she names these people who are not related to her. But, who, you know, they shovel her sidewalk. They make sure her trash gets out to the curb. You know, they'll run to the grocery store and pick up some food if it's snowing and she can't get out. You have to be careful about these people, because sometimes they're predators. So, but most of the time they're not. But it's a real... It's a real difficult situation. We don't want to use, frankly, for executors and trustees, you know, forget about a bank. Banks and trust companies have such high minimum net worths for these things. There are only a handful of local banks and fiduciaries who will act as a corporate trustee.
Well, let me push back on you for a second. So if your fact pattern warrants real... administration and you know, we're worried about how someone's going to be spending this money, mm-hmm. and we want some pros involved. I've had situations where we have a bank as a co-trustee, mm-hmm. I've had situations where a bank is a solo backup, because it's really the financial advisor's firm who's been with mom and dad for 40 years, and so they trust him. He won't do it, but they, you know, it'll
they
be a
can't
formal
do it in most
right.
instances. The financial advisors are, most of them are prohibited by their companies they clear through or whatever from acting as a fiduciary for anybody other than their mom. You know, you can do it for a relative probably, but in fact, I had it recently where, in fact, the wife of a banker was a fiduciary in mom and dad's trust. And the bank, he was a bank in New York City, took the position that they had to approve every trade that the trustee made. They're not even the trustee. I said, so we had the daughter resigned. She had to resign as a trustee.
Well, when you say, you know, the corporate trustee, the bank trustee, you know, I'm talking as like your basic trust, right? We're not talking about millions of dollars. We're just talking about the house, a little bit of money, the Medicaid trust, something like that, right? That's where you don't really want to get someone charging 8% fees, right? That's where it's right. Totally not worth it. A lot of times people say, well, I'm 82. My brother's 84. I say, well, is he with it? Do you like him? Do you want to be your... That's all right. We could always just have backups behind him. You right. know what I'm saying? So
yes.
Don't age discriminate on that. Just because someone's older than you doesn't matter. I like to tell people, plan for the next 3-4 years in terms of your fiduciaries. You can always have backups behind it.
If the fiduciary decides at the time you know, that they're too old, they're too ill, they live in Florida now instead of Albany, and they just don't want to do it, the person you name can renounce their appointment. Right. Just say, look, I just can't do it. So you file a renunciation. It's a piece of paper, though. They say, I know I'm appointed, but I can't do it. Now we go to the next person. So we want at least one or two backups. And presumably, if we're talking about executors or trustees, we also want someone who's likely to outlive you.
Of course.
So
the other thing, Harry, is back to this whole drafting thing. If we draft a good document with good rules, mm-hmm. proper direction as to what happens to your assets, I don't want to tell... I mean, I know we had a caller who's a trustee. I don't want to downplay what it means to be a fiduciary, but... Not a lot of thoughts involved in it if we make it so a lot of thoughts not involved in it, right? The property's going to sell. Proceeds are going to go to X, Y, and Z. End the story. It's going to go to this charity, whatever. There's not a lot of ongoing during the life of the settler of the trust. You come in, you create a trust. We're not talking to your trustee every day. We might talk to them at the beginning right. of the trust and one day when you pass away. It's not a very involved relationship necessarily. It could be, and that's why it's important.
No, for the most part, these trusts are very simple to administer on an ongoing basis. There isn't a lot of things that has to be done, a lot of discussion. If you're in terms of bills, a lot of people, for instance, have all their bills on direct debit. So, you know, you don't have to take care of a lot of things like that. So, but it's important. I think what we're really saying here, we want you to start thinking about these things.
Right.
If your power of attorney only names your spouse, it's really deficient in a way, because if your spouse dies or becomes incapacitated, who's gonna act for you? All relationships end at some point. One part of a married couple is at some point going to die. Sad and tragic as that is to think about, it happens, and it will happen.
So,
as David said in our article, it was an article in the 55 magazine.
You ain't getting out of here alive.
Nobody here gets out of here alive, yeah. enough depressing talk.
Well, no, it's all, it's all what you make it, right? When people do documents and people come in for us to look at their documents, the passage of time alone doesn't mean that they need new documents. If you need new documents, you do, right? If the language doesn't work, if you don't like the fiduciaries you named, if you don't like your healthcare proxy anymore, if, you know, one of your children has some issues going on, right? Things can change, and that's why you should update your documents. When it comes to powers of attorney, though, there was a change 10 plus years ago.
It was 10, going on 11, 2009.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that made the power of attorney I think it's a better document in terms of making sure everyone's on the same page. It is a worse document in terms of getting it signed and the
pain in the neck to sign these new powers.
It's about 15 pages.
You got to initial
long.
It about five times. You got to sign it twice. It has to be notarized twice, witnessed like a will.
Yeah.
It's the most complicated, and it's 12 pages long.
Yeah. So the old one is not 12 pages long. It's in some cases two or three, right? And the old one, only you, the person giving the power, signed, and we could lump in all sorts of different powers in one section. Now you need to separate transactions that are really critical to estate planning, like gifting transactions, et cetera. So question for you, Harry Miller. Client comes in, says, I have this power of attorney. Do I need a new one? And it's from 2008. It's perfect. It's three pages long. But you know that if they go to the wrong bank, they're going to get a runaround because some 28-year-old teller is going to say, well, this isn't 15 pages long.
When the new statute first came out, we told a lot of people that, you know, the old one's good. Let's just use the old one a lot. Now we're 10 years out plus of the new form. And as David said, people that work in banks they don't remember, the 28-year-old branch manager was only 17. They don't remember the old form. They aren't familiar with it. And so we're now advising people you really should get the new form. Even if we told you 10 years ago that the old one was okay, I think now you really need to have the new form up to date, because if you take it to the bank, that's the form they are currently familiar with, and it could create delay and confusion and review, or worse thing, they're going to say, I'm sorry, we can't use this form, you have to come back. Because you know what the law says? The law says unless you use the statutory form of power of attorney, laughingly called the statutory short form,
right,
it's 12 pages long, the bank doesn't have to recognize it. So the question is, the new form right now is the statutory form. The old form technically is no longer the statutory short form power of attorney, and so they probably can get away with saying you got to get the new one.
Right.
So therein lies the problem.
Well, the whole point of the power of attorney is for ease, right? For us to not skip a beat. If some bank employee is going to say, well, we got to send it to our legal department, it'll take four business days. Well, what exactly was the point of the power of attorney?
Exactly. I mean, the whole point, one of the whole points of having a power of attorney is to avoid spending thousands of dollars doing a guardianship proceeding.
15.
For somebody who doesn't have a power of attorney.
$15,000.
Okay? The power of attorney is going to cost, what, $250 to do a healthcare proxy and a power of attorney?
Yep.
It's you're going to spend $10,000 to $15,000 on an uncontested guardianship proceeding, right?
Yep.
Because there's a whole bunch of people involved.
And that's where, Harry, it's even worse because that's where it's wife for husband. That's when it's only child for mom, right?
Mm-hmm.
No one's fighting this, right? It absolutely it's fine.
How about a second marriage where wife petitions for husband and the kids from the first marriage say, wait a minute. We're going to manage dad's money, not you. We never liked you anyway.
The guardianship process is so bad, right, that you have to have a power of attorney and you would, while you're doing it, name three backups. Why not? Just because we don't want to ever have to do that guardianship or come in whenever things change. It's just like, you know, the nursing homes cost so much money that you got to plan. Not like you're going to absolutely need, not everyone's going to become incapacitated one day and will have needed a guardianship in their life. But if you did, my goodness, it's an expensive proposition.
It is. It's expensive and largely unnecessary in most cases with proper planning. Yep. The whole key here is proper planning. And you can avoid wasting literally $10,000-$15,000, and avoiding a family feud. You ought to pick who's going to be your power of attorney, not some judge that decides who's going to be your guardian, because you didn't plan ahead and make those decisions when you were healthy and functioning, and rational and thinking straight.
So I think we only have a couple moments here. Who do you have in the big game?
Oh. Kansas City.
Oh,
definitely.
Give me a break.
Mahomes, watch out. They call him the MacGyver of football. He is a very crazy. He's only 23 years old. Watch out for that kid. He has got a heck of a career coming. I take it you've gone to the dark side.
I'm a lifelong 49er fan. Because when I was 8 years old, they were really, really good at football. So there you go. I stuck.
What happened to the Giants? No?
Well, no. Giants were good in 86, but when I 88... I was 8 years old. I was learning football, really into it, and Montana, Rice.
I should have known you're a Mets fan anyway.
Well, that's at least I have a winner.
All right, guys. Talk to you next week.
Let's go 49ers.
For listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.